Right, Ian, what would you say has been the impact of SHP on the teaching of history in English schools? That's a wide question. But
yes, I think this is a sort of longish list. And this is going to sound organised. One, it's made the teaching of the process of history, the use of sources, causation, etc., much more explicit. First of all, at GCSE, but I think that's come through in the national curriculum and at A-level, so we can see that influence the national curriculum. I think it helped to open up new areas of content, and I think particularly it's helped to keep, in some schools at least, local history and the use of sites alive in the examination course. It's been a continuing source of in-service training for teachers through day courses, conference, and through the resources that we produce, which have an in-service function. And when we get our website into gear shortly, I think that will have an impact. We've had an impact through the resources, because in some ways the most everyday impact you have is through the material that teachers use in the classroom. I think perhaps latterly we've had an increasing impact through our work on teaching activities and styles of activity that children undertake. I mean, we're not alone in that. I think that's been a widespread movement, but we've played our part. And I think also we've done a lot of work on actually how courses are constructed, because originally SHP was about the diversity of content in GCSE. And more recently, we've been doing a lot of work on how you put courses together at Key Stage 3. And I think one of the fundamental impacts of SHP was on assessment. That was back in the late 70s and early 80s, when criterion referencing was coming in and exams were in a really sort of quite positive and experimental phase. And SHP played a really sort of important role then. So that's about half a dozen ways. Because we've become part of the furniture, it becomes increasingly hard to differentiate SHP's influence from anybody else's, in the sense that we all have overlaps. Nowadays, the two people who work for SHP, between them, only have a total of 3 days a week. So we have to work for other people as well. We do independent freelance consultancy. So we're much more intertwined.
Well, you were saying you didn't work now for QCA.
So yes, that's and an input, I will run my own courses, which, if they're done under my name or Thinking History, will be identical to if I run a course for SHP. It's just the label's different. Mm. But so it's or we do work for the Historical Association. So you can't, it's harder to say this is SHP in a way that you could in the 1970s or 80s.
So how would you measure the success of SHP, and where do you think it's going in the future? Is it even needed anymore?
It used to be very easy to sort of suggest success, because way back in the 80s you could say, oh, you know, we've got 25% of schools doing the exam course or 30, and it's up to 37 now. But actually that isn't a real measure of success. That's just a measure of take-up. And some people might be not doing it for the reasons they'd want to. How do you measure success? I don't think I can objectively. I think it's subjective. I would say that history teachers are now probably doing a better job than 35 years ago. And I mean, history around 1970, was it, what did the schools council say? It was the second least popular subject with kids.
Mm.
And it's not the same measurement, but now Ofsted regularly put us amongst the top two best taught subjects. So something's changed. And SHP has played its part in that. And I wouldn't put it higher. the history teaching community, which obviously doesn't embrace all teachers, is a more vibrant one, I think, than ever before. And the quality and depth of the discussion is greater.
You mean at the conference or
at the courses, training courses? And at courses. Mm. And in the pages of Teaching History, which has been transformed. And I also feel quite sorry for trainees now, because the amount of stuff they have to take on board while they're training in terms of understanding about the complexity of teaching is just so much more difficult than it was 35 years ago. I mean, the kids aren't any different, I think. But what trainees have to come to terms with faster is just, there's just been a mammoth change. I think SHP has been successful in keeping people asking questions, because if you don't keep asking questions, you don't keep moving on. Of course, it's debatable whether moving on is the same as improvement. Mm-hmm. But I think in many areas we are now asking fundamental questions that we weren't asking before. And that gives us the chance of moving on. Is it needed anymore? Where does it go in the future? Well, no, it's not needed. But then few things are, really. Apart from food and drink and relaxation. It would just be foolish to throw away nearly 40 years worth of accumulated experience and possibly, I would hope, accumulated respect. I think that amongst history teachers, SHP is respected for its work and its role and its devotion to trying to improve history teaching and for providing practical solutions to problems teachers have got. Where we go in the future, it's trying to keep those things going, trying to maybe do a little bit more work on A level, maybe move into primary. Because we have had a regular turnover of director, each time you get somebody new, you do a review process, and we've Michael Riley took over in the autumn of 2008, and one of the things we've done this year is to go back to what are we about, what are our principles, and just review those as the bedrock for moving on. Because if we don't ask questions of ourselves, then we might as well stop.
What did you decide were your core principles?
I have to go and look at a piece of paper. We actually haven't finished that process. We Michael put together a draft. That was then discussed at our advisory group. And at the conference in July, which is less than a month away, those issues, Michael will sort of put them in front of the sort of 200 odd people and get a discussion going, which we hope will be sort of part of the sort of warp and waft of that conference.
Mm.
And after that, you know, a final document. It looks like it's reaffirming a lot of what was put in the original documentation by David Sylvester in the early 70s, built around improving children's understanding of how history is studied and how that relates to their world, very much focusing upon the needs of children that can be met through history. Reaffirming the importance of being up to date with historical research, which is so easy to get adrift from in a sort of rush of publications or classroom needs, that actually good history teaching needs to be aware of what is happening in the academic research world and to continue to keep trying to reflect that, rather than sort of, it's easy to be stuck in what was up-to-date history when you were at university yourself 25 or 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an important thing to keep in touch with. But I think that's a sort of watch this space sort of answer.
Okay, thanks very much.